the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. My guest today is Shauna Coronado, organic gardener, photographer, healthy lifestyle expert, radio and TV personality, and author of 7 books. Her 2017 book, The Wellness Garden, shares Shauna's personal journey from a debilitating diagnosis to wellness once again. When she's not gardening, Shauna is on the road speaking at Mother Earth News fairs around the country. Shauna, I'm so glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's about time we got together.
I know. We met online sometime around 2014. I think we were you were doing a Google Hangout, and I was on that, and you hosted some gardening thing. I forget exactly what that was, but that's how we came across each other. And I think
here we are all these years later.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah. And we run in the same social media circles and all of that. So it's always fun to have a face-to-face, or at least on the via Skype chat.
Indeed. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So your garden in not your new place, but your old place was featured. It was a Starburst veggie garden that was featured in Nikki Jabor's book on vegetable garden design, Groundbreaking Food Gardens. But that's not where you are now. For those who aren't familiar, can you describe your garden for our listeners?
Okay. What an adventure. So to start, I lived in Illinois for 30 years and had all kinds of crazy garden adventures. That front lawn vegetable garden that you see in a lot of my books and all of the places that I talk about, I show photos of it and the whole thing. That was in Illinois. When I was diagnosed in 2015 with severe degenerative osteoarthritis of the spine, there is no cure. I needed to find a way to reduce the gardening technique that I would, reduce the pain and the excessiveness, planting 30,000 plants every year, not good for your back. So I had to find a way to really change it up. So it started with elevated growing. I really, grew in elevated beds. If any of you know, like go out to gardeners.com. The veg trug is one of my favorites. I love that it's elevated enough that it's not only for people who like are in a wheelchair or something like that, but it's really for people who have any type of hand, arm, or back debilitation. It's wonderful. And if you don't have anything wrong with you, you should use it anyway, because it's super good for promoting less stress on your back. So I started elevating, and that did help significantly. But what didn't help was the 9 months of gray that is Chicago. Everyone's like, Chicagoland, it's beautiful. What are you talking about, girl? And I'm like, no, my God, gray for 9 months. And when it got to be below 30, below zero, like minus 30 below zero, I can't even tell you the pain that I would be in because of this. And we make a joke all the time in my family. The only time I ever wanted to leave my husband was in January, because it's just, oh my God, and the cold, it just killed me. And then my mood was bad for everything else in my life as well. So I consulted with my health experts, and we started talking about that fact of the grayness was affecting me. I had a very short garden season with a very long season of pain. How can I combat that? And that's when my husband and I started tossing around moving to Arizona. We know, of course, that the seasons are reversed. So right now, today, there's a heat warning out. It's 112.
Whoa.
I'm not even kidding. And But I'm here in air conditioning, loving it. And when I look out the window, I still see sunshine. And that is significant for me, both in mood and mood boosting, but also in back health and my arthritis. I mean, my symptoms have virtually gone away by doing my health regimen plus moving down here. So in answer to your question, my existing garden right now has changed up a lot. We are rebuilding the front lawn, and it's going to be a patio with drought-tolerant native plants. So we're talking cactus and that sort of thing will be in the front. Mm-hmm. But I have a giant side yard, which I'm going to put elevated beds in. It's like a mile, right, of garden that I just garden down this giant strip with all of these elevated beds. So that will be instituted this fall, because fall is gardening season here in the Southwest. And it is because the summer is too hot. I start that garden in late September, early October. It grows fantastically until about December. So that's a typical summer garden length for the rest of the United States.
Right.
Right? There's a whole garden season right there. Then December hits, and in Arizona, the nights get to be 30 degrees. So that, it, you know, that kills a tomato right there. And it also succulents of all kinds. So it's like, oh, you can grow anything there. No, no, I cannot grow everything here. But if I plan well seasonally, I have a lot of options. So February happens, right? December and January, cold nights, warm days. It'll be 50 and 60 degrees during the day, which is fabulous. Not pool weather, but still, it'll do for me compared to minus 30. You know, it's like this huge change. Then February 1st starts. It's a new planting season. So I plant again in February, and I grow through June 1st. So for me, instead of having one planting season, I have now transformed my life into garden heaven, which is two planting seasons every year. Oh my goodness, I'm feeling so wonderful.
Yeah, that's very, very similar to how things are here in Los Angeles and other Southern California areas. We plant cool weather crops in the fall, in October, November, and those go through till about February. We don't have the frost issues because we're coastal, like, you know, the cold like you have. And then we plant the hot season stuff when February shows up, and we put those in. And then August, September, and October suck. That's kind of our winter where nothing grows.
Exactly. But what's really funny is this summer, you know, this is my first summer here, and I have a friend, Austin, who lives in Austin. He's adorable. And he's always like, oh, my God, that first summer nearly killed me. And I'm like, this summer is going to kill me because I've never been exposed to 112 degrees. You know, how am I going to live with that? Guess what? It's no big deal. I get it. Mornings are 30 degrees cooler than the evenings. So I get out early morning. It's 79, 80 degrees. I do my weeding, which isn't much at all here. I do my chores. I walk. And every morning I walk an hour a day. I do all that, and then I come inside, and I work out of my home in the air conditioning all afternoon.
Nice.
Shebang. Yeah, I'm happy as a clam.
And so you've got this side garden that's going to be all raised or elevated planters, and what will you be planting come time?
I really would love to do leafy greens. One of my new book, Stacked with Flavor, is coming out, and it's based on cooking an anti-inflammatory technique with anti-inflammatory techniques.
Got it.
And so I have this like dream vision of building an outdoor kitchen and then preparing the like green leafy vegetables that I'll be growing live on camera.
Nice.
So I really want to do that. And I think that those crops that are leafy and green are quick turnover, like basil and lettuces. They grow rather quickly. You can plant several consecutive in a season. And that means I'll have more production in a smaller space. I think is really a smart plan. But the other thing I have a fascination for, and this is, if you know who Lisa Ziegler is, you should, by the way, if you don't know who Lisa Ziegler is, you should look her up. She's a flower farmer in North Carolina, and she's really inspired me. I've always loved zinnias, and my grandmother used to have a cutting garden. And so many people say, oh, you're going to have an elevated bed situation. You'll only be able to grow vegetables, and you know, it's like, no, I have a lot of experience growing in elevated beds. And of course, I wrote the book for growing a living wall, you know, so I really know how to grow elevated plants. And having a miniature zinnia farm, you know, a cutting garden that's elevated is not something that everyone does, but it's so easy to accomplish. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, expanding and growing in this environment.
Nice. And I'm just going to throw out there, if you haven't been to Native Seed Search yet, because you are in Arizona, and they are too, they are selling all of the seeds that are native to that area and, you know, of to the indigenous peoples in that area. And they are very cool and they do great classes and they have a wheel of their planting schedule that is, you know, for all of the things that you would be planting and what time of year you would do it. So I always recommend for people, Native Seed Search, for people who live in that area where there are desert, you know, desert communities, high desert and low desert type communities, that's where to get your seeds.
Will do. Yeah. That is fantastic.
So you've been cranking out books, sometimes two in a year, and I marvel at that. You've got a lot going on, and I want to talk about the Wellness Garden and 101 Garden Hacks, which both came out in 2017. But let's start with the Wellness Garden, because you've already alluded to why this came about. But can you give us a short version of the story of this book?
Of the Wellness Garden.
Yes.
So the Wellness Garden, 100 years ago, my very first book was self-published. And it sounds very naughty. It was called Gardening Nude, and there's no more books left. I sold out of everything, and it is what it is. But that book was actually about wellness. It was about how to feel better. And that journey started when I quit a job that I hated, and it was a moment where it was, I quit. No, you're fired. No, I quit. No, oh my God. You know, like, oh, no, God. I hate you. I hate you. You know, one of those. And it was just horrible. And I walked off that job and transformed my life. And I started out as a landscape designer with no education, no background. I just grew up on a farm in Indiana and I knew how to grow things. And that was the beginning of all of this. And so that first season, I went from taking over a dozen prescriptions a year down to a dozen prescriptions a day.
Wow.
Down to two prescriptions a day. And that was by being outdoors in the green world, you know, gardening and living this really outdoor existence that I had never lived before. And it was amazing, like absolutely amazing, and totally changed my life. So that was the beginning of this. So jump ahead. In 2015, I was diagnosed with the severe degenerative osteoarthritis of the spine, and there's no cure. And I'm like, what I need to do is get back to basics from a health perspective.
Yeah.
And so the Wellness Garden is really addressing that. We talk about diet and nutrition, but minimally, we're more focused on outdoor exercise, gardening, therapeutic gardening, yoga, what you can do to reduce your chronic pain and use a garden as a tool to do so. And so this is the first step for me to step, I want to say, away from the garden as purely a beautiful thing and, you know, or a useful thing that is about food only, and moving into something that's way more than that. And it totally changed the way that I see myself in a garden. And so what I do every day is, and this was, when I first spoke with my doctor, the doctor's like, what I want to do is put you on pain therapy. Pain therapy is opioids.
Ooh.
And I said, oh, hell no, mm-hmm. I'm not doing it. You know, you can't do that to me. I will be addicted. I know myself. I'm growing 30,000 vegetables a year. I have an addictive personality. I could not possibly do this, you know. And the guy argued with me, and he's like, fine, we'll send you to physical therapy, which did help a bit. And he's like, also, I want you to walk 1 hour every day. That walking 1 hour every day was way more powerful than taking a pain pill.
Excellent.
I mean, I went from barely being able to walk to truly walking, like I walk 3 to 5 miles every single day now. I mean, it's made me fluid and healthy in a way that I never could have guessed. But outside of that, he had absolutely no advice for me. And I was tremendously upset about that whole thing. I mean, how, you know, you can't just give me opioids. There has to be something else. So I remember that I had worked with a nutritionist a few years before. My daughter has hypothyroidism, and we had gone into her. And the experience was phenomenal because she told me at the time, she said, if all people went on an anti-inflammatory diet, we would no longer have diabetes, heart disease, and all these other problems that we have right now. And I'm like, lady, you're full of baloney. You know, that's, there's no way that that can be true. And I didn't believe her. And so jump ahead months and months and months. Here we are. I am walking an hour on the track. I am sobbing, absolutely sobbing. And I am in so much pain. And I'm thinking, this is the end of my gardening career, my garden writing career. This is the end of everything. Mm-hmm. And I remembered her. I called her while I was on the track crying, and she canceled all her appointments for the day. I went in and literally threw myself on her shoulder, crying, and I was a hot mess. And she said, we are going to change your life forever. And I, again, called baloney, but within 4 days of changing my food that I was consuming, I went from horrible pain where I could barely walk to about 40% less pain. And now, jump ahead many years, I have about 80% less pain than I had. There is no cure for osteoarthritis, at least not my variety of arthritis.
Wow.
So the answer then becomes using nutrition to help make that, make yourself feel better and have less chronic pain. So what her emphasis was vegetables. I've been growing vegetables all these years, but I know she's like, no, you need a heavy veg diet. And I'm like, well, there's so much chewing involved.
Like, are you one of those people who didn't like kale?
Yes, I hated kale.
I had a feeling. Everyone associates kale with chewing, and I grow 14 different varieties of kale every year because I'm a kale whore and I love it, and so I recognize that in you.
So I'm like, my God, the chew, I'll be chewing forever. How can you do this to me, you know? And she's like, seriously, we are changing you up. So here's the food plan is an adaptation of the Mediterranean style diet, which is incredibly healthy. Heart experts have been, you know, surgeons have been recommending this diet for, you know, practically a century. And it is, it, so telling people only to go on keto, only to go on paleo, only to go on this or that. You need to be on the grapefruit diet. Are you kidding me? You know, I think that we all need, from my personal experience, we all need a well-rounded, nutritious diet. Whether we're vegetarians or we're meat eaters, it still needs to be very heavily pronounced and filled with vegetable and produce. So that's the most significant change in my diet, if you will, is that I eat, you know, two-thirds of a plate of vegetable or produce and only a small, you know, a quarter of it, it or a third of it is meats. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that became the learning experience that I had. And so for the last, since 2015, and actually since the Wellness Garden came out, I've been working to improve my own chronic pain. Because if I can find a way utilizing the garden and vegetable material to do this, then I can help all those people who like to grow, who want to have less chronic pain, who might have all kinds of inflammatory problems like asthma or allergies or, you know, any variety of arthritis and diabetes and heart disease. How can I help these people for real? And this has become what I have been put on earth for. I mean,
aww,
it makes me...
That's so great.
But I feel like I'm here to really help people in a way that I couldn't ever have been had I not had this experience. So it's, yes, I do need to make a living. So, you know, I write books. I do make money from these books. But ultimately, I'm making a living doing something where I'm helping other people. So it all comes together. I've improved my own life through a positive diet that involves vegetable, and I teach people how to garden and go outdoors and be healthy. And it's all together. We're all helping not only ourselves, but community in the process of doing all that.
And the planet, because eating vegetables, it's lower on the food chain. You're having less of an impact on the planet. It's all good. Everything you're saying is wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is what it's all about. And so the next book, by the way, I know we're supposed to talk about it later, but here we are.
Yeah.
It's called Stacked with Flavor. And it's a cookbook that is based on my inflammatory food plan. So I'm not trying to be a nutritionist or a doctor here. This is a cookbook, but it also specifically explains a plan so that other people can look at it, can go to their health experts, get their advice, and combine all this. They'll have recipes and like a monthly meal plan that they could tap into that would really help them. Ooh. And the problem is like, it's very sweet. I'll be up on stage and there's 700 people in front of me and there's this one guy, there's always one guy, and the one guy stands up and he's like, "Hey lady, it tastes like shit." And I'm like, "I'm not eating broccoli, my God." You know, I mean, like, seriously, people have said this.
Wow.
You know, and I'm like all blown away and shocked over it and trying. I'm like, "Don't say that word. We're at a large and by, oh my God."
Yeah, right. How do you respond to something like that in front of 700
so
people?
That's it. It became the issue, was not the language. Although, hey, right. You know, but it was. How do I address these people that feel like it tastes horrible to eat a vegetable?
Yeah.
And, you know, we were all 6 years old with a Brussels sprouts in front of us. I get it. You know, we all have different taste needs. And let's say, for example, that you're suffering from cancer and you are put on chemotherapy. Then your taste is tremendously different. So how do we increase your flavor and your liking of vegetables to match then that nutritional content that we're getting when we have vegetables? And that becomes the question. And I, to answer that, I started investigating all the ways that you can improve flavor in your vegetable. And part of that, of course, is when you grow your own vegetable, like your dozen varieties of kale,
yes,
to, you know, pick it fresh. Because right. When you're picking something fresh, then you're getting not only a full nutritional value, but you also get the best flavor possible. And an example of that is tomatoes. There is nothing better than an ultra ripe, perfect tomato that you have just picked and brought in compared to that horrible thing we get in January, which is not a ripe tomato.
It's not a tomato. It's not even a tomato, right?
It's horrible. It's horrible. And so, first thing, pick your food fresh. And to do that, that means growing vegetables can become a very important part of your dietary answer to this question. But then the other thing is that, you know, my grandmother's way to fix broccoli, this is how I was raised on broccoli, is first, you boil the broccoli until it's mush.
Oh, God.
Okay, now, hold on. We're not done yet. Okay?
Oh, God.
Then we put it in a dish. We smother it with Velveeta.
Oh, yeah.
Not cheese. We're talking Velveeta, which right. is not really cheese.
It's not cheese.
Yes. And then crushed crackers over the top.
Wow.
Then it's all baked in the oven until it's nice and bubbly. And that was the only way broccoli entered my mouth for, you know, my entire childhood, all the way up until I left home. And so I didn't really understand what a fresh vegetable is, how to cook it, what to do with it. And I think that's a lot of people in the United States feel that way for sure. And so who knew that roasting vegetables increases the flavor so very much? Mm-hmm. Not like roasted boiled vegetables, but actually, you know, roasting cauliflower. And yeah. that roasted, where you get almost a little black tip, just mm-hmm. a little. The flavor, the sugars increase significantly. So the flavor in the vegetable that you're picking out of your garden suddenly becomes 10 times what it was before. Now, once you get that situation set up, then I have a great example is my daughter. She's 28 and she's like me. She was like, "But Mom, all the chew." You know? I was saying, which is so funny, you know, but she was saying the same things. She figured out that, I told her, my nutritionist told her actually, add a tablespoon or two of your favorite herb seasoning mix to your vegetables for roasting. So you're drizzling it with a little olive oil. You're throwing, you know, a tablespoon or two of your favorite seasoning mix on top, and then you're doing this thing. And it tastes so good. She loves vegetables now. Yeah. And every time she roasts them, she makes sure she adds this extra oomph of flavor. So the book is filled with all of these tips, plus ideas for how you make your own seasoning mixes. Because if you go to the grocery store right now and you get like Slap Your Mama seasoning mix, or all of these different things that they have, you read the labels. It's filled with crap.
Yep.
So you're growing these fresh vegetables and then you're sprinkling a bunch of chemicals on top of it. That's no good. I mean, we need to have balance here. So I started making my own seasoning mixes. Now, not everyone can go organic all the time. I understand that. But I try to use organic herbs.
Yeah.
I use either my fresh herbs that I've grown and dried, or I buy, you know, like seasoning that is organic. I make my own herb combinations. It literally takes 2 minutes. It's so easy. And then my vegetables taste new and different every day.
That's a great solution.
We all have our favorite seasoning mixes, of course, but once I got bored, you know, so I'm doing like Italian seasoning over and 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 over. That was my big seasoning for the first time, you know, when I first did this. And then one day I woke up and I'm like, nope, can't do Italian seasoning anymore. I'm like so burnt out on Italian seasoning. So then I started making all the seasonings, everything from fajita and taco, which is very North American, to curries and, you know, Asian mixes. And it's amazing. I mean, like the flavor is just out of this world. Sometimes I add a teaspoon. Sometimes I add 2 tablespoons. You know, it depends on what I cook. And so the cookbook is, even though it's a cookbook and it is also a meal plan, it's really a solution for vegetables.
Yeah. I mean, and does the cookbook have your spice blend recipes in there?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And when I first went to the publisher and I'm like, I got seasoning mixes. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I got seasoning mixes and you don't understand how good and I need to. And they're like, but the grocery store, you can just get it anywhere. I'm like, no, it tastes different when you make it fresh, you know, and then it really does. So when I first approached them, they were like, what the heck, woman? And what's ended up happening is I think this is truly the best book I've ever written. That is, and by the way, I did all my own photography, which is food photography. I do all my photography for all my books, but food photography is a whole different ball of wax.
It sure is. Yeah, I have a friend who's a food photographer, and she said it's all about not making it look like dog food.
Exactly. So hard.
It's so hard because go ahead.
Everything just looks exactly the same. Yep. Unless you do something crazy with the background. So it became very challenging to take from a photography perspective, it looks the same, you know, so you can't just put it on a table. You have to do more with it. It was so much fun. It was also a total wreck. You have to hear what happened. So I moved from Illinois. I left on a 5-week tour where I stopped all the way from Chicago all the way to Arizona and bringing my car down here.
Wow.
I stopped every single day and did a speech, which was quite the adventure. You have no idea all the crazy, crazy things that happened along the way. But I left on the coldest day that Chicago's seen for many years. It was minus 50.
Ooh.
When I left. I know.
Sayonara, and Chicago.
I know. I'm like, see ya, I'm out of here. It's horrible. And, you know, and the entire drive down was, you know, quite a drama. So once I landed, I didn't have a house. We bought a condo to be a temporary resting spot until we could find a permanent home. So I landed in this condo. This condo did not have gas stove. It only had an electric stove, and it's like from the 70s, you know, so it's this old electric stove. Every single day I cooked in that house, the fire alarm, the smoke alarm went off.
Oh, my God.
Every day. Because I've never, in 30 years, I've not cooked on electric. So it was a totally new learning experience. So I can cook clearly.
Yeah.
It was a whole different thing. I didn't know how to do it. So through all of that, I've got hundreds of photos together of some of the most delicious food ever. And I'm the only person living in that condo. So I ate everything that I photographed. literally everything. It was awesome, and I loved it, and it was the funnest book to make ever. But what's the most important thing is I'm teaching people how to eat vegetables for real.
That's great. And when does that book come out?
September 1st, I believe. At the latest, it'll be the end of that week, but I think it's September 1st, and so far, we have got hundreds and hundreds of pre-sale orders already because people are like, this is exactly what I want, is an anti-inflammatory book to help me with my arthritis and all of that. How do I do this? And I got tired of all these very medical types of books telling me stuff that I didn't understand and want just, you know, someone who speaks ordinary language, you know, to tell me how to make an anti-inflammatory dish taste good.
Wow. It sounds like a much needed resource and people are going to eat it up, literally.
You're so funny.
Oh, that just came out. I didn't even plan that.
No planning anything.
No, not at all. So I want to jump to your another one of your books. I shouldn't say your other book because you have seven. 101 Organic Gardening Hacks. It shares eco-friendly and money-saving solutions for gardening. Like what?
There are many hundreds and hundreds of tips in here. I mean, 101 to be exact, clearly. You know, like tips like giving seeds a soak to help them sprout, which a lot of people get seeds and then they don't understand why they haven't sprouted, you know, what have they done wrong? Well, they might not have done a whole lot wrong at all, but giving them a soak beforehand makes a big difference. I give tips on like edible hacks, like how to help herbs and vegetables survive dry weather, and how to like plant globe basil, because globe basil is also at least in Illinois, chased my rabbits away. I didn't have rabbits in my garden, and I planted the globe basil around it, which is an interesting tip. It doesn't work for everyone because a hungry, ravenous rabbit is a real jerk, you know.
Yes.
But globe basil is far more effective. I've tried regular basil, does not work. It's the globe basil. The other basil that works is Thai. So Thai basil is scented strongly. And so when a rabbit walks up to globe or Thai basil, he's like, oh, God, can't stand that. I mean, it's just too strong of a scent, and he hops away. And again, this would not work if you had a starving rabbit. But one of my tips that I wanted to tell you that I think is a really good one is about earwigs. Ooh. Now, do you have earwigs where you're located?
Oh, yes, we do. And especially in the fall when there is moisture. So we get a lot of earwigs. Yeah.
Okay. This is an organic earwig solution. You'll have to put on your imagination, since this is voice and not television. Uh-huh. It's voice-a-vision or whatever. You know? So here's what you do. You get a newspaper, you lay it out flat, and then you roll it up into a tight roll so that the roll is like a long pointy wand, if that's a good description.
Yep.
You take that long pointy wand and you take it out to your garden in the evening on a very dry night. This does not work on a wet night. Believe me, I've tried everything. Mm-hmm. And so, dry night, you get a garden hose. You set the long pointy strip of newspaper down onto the ground near where the earwigs have been bothering you. And then you soak the newspaper and the ground surrounding it. Now, the first time I did this, I made the mistake of opening up the newspaper to look inside.
Oh. Yeah.
And earwigs went flying out everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, so what they do is they climb into that newspaper and they nestled their way in. So in the morning, what you have to do is you close it up and you go and you throw it in the garbage. You do mm-hmm. not put it in the compost or anything like that. You put it in a tight area, and then those earwigs will die. Okay. So you have to do this night after night after night. It's like, I think that the most success I had was doing it 10 nights in a row. But what happened in subsequent years is, I mean, for like almost 5 years, I had very few earwigs. And it's because you're taking all of the earwigs that would have been laying eggs in the ground, and you're taking them away.
Right. Your so population reduction.
Yeah, population reduction. And then in future years, I definitely saw a big difference. But again, you have to do this, like I said, like 10 nights in a row, which sounds crazy, but you know, you get a martini and you get your hose, you walk out in the garden. It's really not that big of a deal. And you'll have a great time when those earwigs are not eating holes in your hostas or whatever the plant is that you are being attacked.
That's a great tip. We usually put out a bowl of olive oil, which I somehow discovered from a friend of mine that they love olive oil and they go in and die. So you can get a whole bunch of them that way. But if you water, you end up getting water in the oil and you have to refresh it. And olive oil's not cheap. So, you know, that's a thing. So it's nice to have another option that is effective.
That's a cheaper solution. Okay, yeah. I have to tell you a funny story because my brother-in-law was, we were having a conversation at the kitchen table and the whole family was over and we were talking about slugs and how you do like your olive oil tip only for slugs, you put beer.
Right.
And they're attracted to the beer and then they fall in and drown. And my brother-in-law, I will never forget, he's like, so what you're saying to me is that they get drunk and then they die? And
yeah.
He's like, and then he starts behaving like a drunk slug. Oh, I'm so drunk. So funny.
Yeah.
And now whenever somebody says slug control, I'm always thinking of these poor little drunk slugs that are wandering the garden.
I know. Waste. And at least they die happy, right?
Exactly. There's got to be some positive there. The trick here, what we're talking about, is organic tips, organic control. I think that since the 1950s, everyone thinks that we have to use Roundup. We have to use the chemicals that kill all the bugs because God forbid we should have a bug in our garden.
Right.
And, you know, like Jessica Wallace or the bug lady, I call her, you know, all these people who really are trying to teach that organic control is so much better. And having people ask me, what do you do if, you know, bugs attack your garden? And I say I ignore them.
Yeah.
And they're shocked, like, but your garden is so beautiful. I'm like, but that's the odds. You're going to lose a percentage of the garden, either to gardener failure, because sometimes I'm a dumbass and I get, right? And I kill a plant and I do it and I'm sorry, plant, but well, you know, you kill plants occasionally. The other thing is sometimes it's totally out of your control. It's environmental. It's the weather. It's what have you. You know, you lose plants due to this. So you plant enough plants that a 10 or 15% loss is not going to be the end of your world. And when you do that with vegetables, then you always have a productive crop and the bugs take a little bit of it, but you take the majority of it.
Yeah, I like that philosophy. And it's all about creating balance and having a strong ecosystem that supports good bugs that combat the bad bugs and all of that at the same time. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, you've just been giving us some great tips, but it is officially tip time. Do you have another awesome tip that you would like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
I do, and this is a great time to do it, actually, because, and it's in my book. It's in 101 Organic Gardening Hacks, but one of the things that I tried over the years was to collect seeds. So we're talking like zinnia seeds, for instance. I love zinnia seeds because they're huge. You can really see them, where a mint seed or an oregano seed is tiny and is very hard to collect, and it's an issue. So here's what I would do. I would have a healthy stem that would be a zinnia, and it would be the one I want to reproduce. I would put a paper bag over the top of the zinnia and then tie it onto the stem. So then instead of a beautiful zinnia, you look like you have a paper bag garden,
right?
Because you have, you know, a few paper bags sitting around. Then you cut the stem down below the paper bag. So when you flip it upside down, you have a paper bag that's in your hand with the stem sticking out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is as it dries, you should put the paper bag on it as it is starting to die. Do you know what I mean? Like drying, it's looking like it's at the end of its flower life. That's a time to paper bag it.
Okay.
And then as you flip it over, you leave it set like that. You can hang it like in your garage, or you can just leave it sit. And then in a week or so, you come back and give that paper bag a little shake. And you can hear all the seeds that have fallen out of the flower and down into the bottom of the bag. So my super-de-duper tip is bagging your flowers in order to collect seeds. It's effective and it's worked for me for years.
Awesome. And it saves money because you don't have to go back and buy new seeds. And a lot of flowers, like poppies, will make tons of seeds, and you can save those for years and reuse them, and they're awesome. Thank you for sharing that expert tip, Shauna, and thanks for being a guest on the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast.
Thanks for having me. How much fun is this?
Yeah, and how do people find you?
Please go to my website. It's ShaunaCoronado.com. So it's my name. And the thing is that what's going to be changing up over the next 6 months is I'm getting people signed up to do online courses, which I'm creating right now, and also have a monthly newsletter come out that will give anti-inflammatory cooking tips, gardening tips, and all the things that you need to live a wellness lifestyle.
Awesome. That sounds good. And is there a place where people can sign up for that now, or is there?
Just on my website. So
okay.
You can go to ShaunaCoronado.com and you'll see the email sign up and all of that.
Okay, great. And we will put that in the blog for people to click through to. Awesome. And you also have some social media links as well that you'd like to share, perhaps?
I do, but I have to tell you, everything is my name. So if you want to find me on Instagram, I am at Shauna Coronado. If you want to find me on Facebook, just search Shauna Coronado. Basically, my name is my game.
That's right.
So you can find me out there anywhere. And please follow me and friend me. I always want new friends.
Good. And that's Shauna, S-H-A-W-N-A. Coronado. And that'll be on the blog as well. All right, garden nerds, you'll find links to Shauna Coronado's website and blog on thegardennerd.com this week. We'll also post links to Shauna's social media feeds and her YouTube channel, as well as a link to a cool drone tour of Shauna's previous garden. It's just totally awesome, and I want people to see that. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of free gardening information at gardennerd.com. Show your support for this podcast and the other free stuff on Garden Nerd by becoming a Patreon subscriber. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under GardenNerd1, on Facebook as GardenNerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!